just been the start of a dynasty. This is history being written. The greatest moment I've seen in Premier League football.
Hey, welcome back to Across the Pond, a Premier League podcast hosted by Americans. Today, we have substituted Chris Bowerbank out. We're giving him some R&R. You know, every good host needs a break once in a while. And we've replaced him with Jess Charman. You have Miles and Jacob here as well. Guys, how you guys doing? How's it feel to not have Chris being in charge? I mean, Seth?
It's really great. I think we're thrilled. There's a Newcastle-like takeover. There's a new regime. But we don't have.
You think I came back? I only came back because Shay was in charge, guys. That's why I'm back on the debut. Sorry, Chris.
Loyalty. I love it. Jess, you're on baby watch right now. Do you want to? Is that okay if we tell the audience? You know, you're multitasking. It's the true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Renaissance woman.
It's the true life, right? We're going to have plenty of ATP babies incoming, but the original ATP baby currently featuring on her first podcast. So if you'll hear any screams in the background, maybe I wasn't doing a very good job.
Can she save penalties like her namesake? That is the question.
That's the goal. I mean, I'm throwing tennis balls at her already. So if she's not a soccer player, then we'll send her back where she came from.
I love it. Miles, you're awfully quiet over there. Are you trying to save your hot takes for when we get to United Liverpool section, or are you just missing Chris?
Well, you know, I was lucky. I had a call from Chris today. He actually entrusted me with some, you know, very important notes that I will be reading later in the episode. But yes, Shay, I'm saving my energy for later. I expended a lot of energy earlier today in our group chat. I think I should probably apologize officially for pushing you all a little bit, but I will hold back, Shay, until we get to the meat of the program.
Oh yeah, no need to hold back now. But I will say I anticipate a lot less trolling today, and I won't say why that is, but I think you guys can understand why. So let's jump right into it, guys. So we had a big match week, a lot of interesting scorelines. I'll just put it like that, and all of which led to Chelsea and Liverpool at the head of the Premier League table. But for this first section, let's talk about the most disappointing losses of the weekend. I'll jump off the bat with Liverpool United. I'm happy to, you know, give you guys that opportunity to talk about how great Mohamed Salah was and how great Jurgen Klopp is compared to Ole at the helm.
Well, Shay, I mean, well, I suppose we should first start by talking about Liverpool. I mean, arguably, Liverpool did not field their strongest lineup, right? Mane was on the bench. Fabinho's taking a bit of an injury. You know, Konate stepped in, making Eric fall in love all over again, giving him something to believe in. So, you know, I think there are points to this Liverpool squad and their ability to rotate out Keita coming in and still perform at an extremely high level. Now, while I think Liverpool played an excellent game, having watched Man U this season, and the way that they've dealt with the press, the way that they've struggled to connect up top, their lack of tenacity in the midfield, coming up against a team like Liverpool is probably their worst nightmare. So, you know, I was saying for weeks this was going to be a spanking. Did anyone think different?
Yeah, I wasn't. I mean, okay, I will go on record by saying last week I thought United was going to win, but that wasn't coming from a place of me actually thinking about a better team. It was just because I was hoping for a hot take that would pan out. We're not surprised United lost the game. I think that goes for saying for all of us. Maybe Charmin has a different thought, but we're talking about a team that barely beat Atalanta after looking horrible in the first half against them and getting saved by, you know, one to go by Ronaldo, who actually played poorly for most of that game. Lost to Leicester, drew Everton, lost to Villa before that. So they've been on a recent bad run of form, but I did not expect it to look this bad, Miles. I mean, we've been talking about Ole for a long time and his ability to manage. And for some reason, he always seems to save his job on big games because either the players play phenomenal and back him, or he gets something right in that moment. And I would not have expected this even for the worst manager, managing United. This loss was, I mean, we were never in control of that game. And it was just embarrassing to watch as a fan.
Looking back on the game, what you would have thought before, definitely in the prediction league would have put, you know, United to lose it, but the way they lost it, and I want to say it's like the attitude of the players as well. You know, you saw that their heads weren't in it. Look at Ronaldo and his yellow card. That really, he got lucky that the ball was between him and the defender, because it very easily could have turned into a red. The players lost their heads. There wasn't that spirit. You talk about players getting up for big games, but after goal two or three, there was no getting up for the big game. And it could have been a lot worse, honestly, for you.
I did think that the second half of the game was rather disappointing. It felt like Liverpool almost let them off the hook. It could have been a 7 or an 8-0 game, but it did feel like after the Keita injury, perhaps they took their foot off the gas and just thought, let's try and avoid any injuries. It could have been a lot worse. But I think everything you guys said is exactly correct. And I want to just address one of Miles' earlier points, which is about, you know, their previous run. And I think that the fixtures that United have had this season have been relatively easy. And, you know, now they finally come up against a quality opponent, and they struggled. And the rest of their schedule upcoming is no easier. Atlanta, Manchester City, Tottenham. I think they play Watford in there. So at least they have something to perhaps look to get a result about. But it's really the fact that there were expectations of this United team at the beginning of the season. And people said, I don't know if anyone on this podcast said that, but you heard people say that, you know, Ronaldo is the missing piece. With Ronaldo, they could be title challengers. And I think it's just the expectation and hype around the squad was totally disjointed and out of whack with where they really are in the management and the manager that they have and the way that the club is run. And I think this has finally punctured that balloon and brought people down to earth. And for people to realize that, you know, Manchester United isn't infallible. There isn't this, you know, this nostalgia for the Manchester United way perhaps isn't really a reality, that there is no such thing as this Manchester United way or this counterattacking way, or you know, whatever you think that that means kind of means nothing if you can't get the players to work in a coherent system and pull together. So Manchester United are right now and in the doldrums of where Liverpool were before they got Klopp. They're where Arsenal are after Wenger left. They're where Chelsea are after Mourinho left. And you're kind of going to get these cycles where you have to redefine your identity and come coalesce around a plan and implement that plan and have some long-term thinking.
I think, Jacob, with what you're saying, the emphasis so much is on it doesn't matter how good your individual pieces are. Like, there's no denying that the Man United side has so much talent, individual talent. Yeah. When you look at the roster, you're looking at players, and of course, when Ronaldo came, people thought, okay, this could be a bright spark. Who wouldn't be excited about adding him in? But it doesn't matter how good your individual pieces are if there's not someone at the helm to put those puzzle pieces together. And also, if your players aren't willing to necessarily work around each other, you know, you can't just be an amazing individual player. You have to be willing to work within a team with a manager. And it just doesn't sometimes look like the pieces are collaborating properly.
On that, I don't think anyone said Ronaldo's the missing piece, Jacob, and therefore, if you get him, he makes us a title-winning team. I think what the excitement was that we got second place last season. And so you think about, oh, if you bring in a player like Ronaldo, you have to be better. But in this case, I think we actually got worse. And I'm not saying it's a Ronaldo effect. I think it's just you start to not be able to mask some of those inabilities as a manager when you have such higher expectations. Like I just said, you look at the roster, like you got names on here who at their peak, these people were killing it, right? Van de Beek, Sancho, like we got players, but what you see on the field is not an end result of a good tactician or a good system. It's everyone trying to play an individual game to get a good result, but you need more than that.
But I want to ask you guys, do you think that, because this was maybe one of my takeaways from the game and maybe of the last couple weeks, is that maybe Ronaldo's just passed it. You know, he has just passed it at the top level and playing on a top team that's trying to win the Champions League, that you can't build and win around him at his age, at the highest level.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, Jacob. And I think, you know, actually, you know, to your point, Shay, I think bringing Ronaldo in has really, you know, messed with this Man United side because, you know, Peter often mentions it, like Ronaldo doesn't tackle back. He's not as mobile. He's a good poacher. I don't think he's necessarily past it. I just think that this United squad, we're talking about the manager and the players. And I think here we're seeing the combination of signings that haven't addressed the major you know, gaps in United's team. $400 million spent under Ole's reign. Two midfielders brought in. Arguably Bruno Fernandes, an amazing signing. Donny van de Beek doesn't play. So you're left with the midfield of McTominay and Fred. Matic coming on. I mean, they haven't addressed that gap in their midfield. You also have, you know, bringing in Ronaldo would be one thing if you had a team that could play to his strengths. They're like trying to fit him into their style of play and it doesn't even work. You look at the way they tried to press Liverpool, Michael Cox, I mean, he ripped United apart. He called it the most embarrassing defeat of the Premier League and, you know, criticizing players, you know, and I quote, you know, individuals making pointless lone runs in an attempt to prove to us they're working hard. So, you know, like that's a system problem where the players don't know how to press, don't know where to go. They're not connecting with each other. So I think it's twofold. I think, Jacob, to answer your point, you know, they don't have the players to play to Ronaldo's strengths and they don't have the manager to kind of get that organized.
Yeah, I don't think Ronaldo past his prime is really the issue. I mean, the man still has 6 goals in 9 games, and we don't need Ronaldo of his prime. We just need a quality player. I think the issue is we have a serious gap in holding midfield, which got exposed. An unsure defensive holding midfielder in terms of that is just scary when you're playing Mohamed Salah and Mane and Firmino and whoever else Liverpool wants to put out on the attack.
I don't mean to suggest that Ronaldo is the reason that they lost. He's a symptom of the issues at United. He's not the cause of the issues. I just mean to say, like, that's one of my major takeaways about, like, watching this United team play is you'd be so much better playing someone like Cavani. Because as you said, Miles, you know, the press all starts from the front. You know, you organize your team from the front, right? The first man goes and that shapes the rest of what should flow behind it. And, you know, I just have noticed over these past couple of weeks that, you know, the fact that, for instance, you have this quagmire of Ole not being able to not play Ronaldo. I mean, the absurdity of leaving him on there at, you know, 5-0 just to sort of trot around, you know, even after the red card, they made their subs, to just sort of have him trot around and, you know, as you said, have this performative display of defense, you know, it wasn't really helpful to anybody. But the fact that he has to play them and must play them and this compulsion to pick Ronaldo at all times, I just think, again, speaks to the larger issues.
And Jacob, I don't think you're actually, as I know Shay's face when you mentioned Ronaldo was past his prime was a picture, but I think he's stuck in thinking he's still the player he was 5-10 years ago and doesn't know how to adjust his own playing style as well. Like, it's okay to adjust. It's okay to age. It's okay to still be at the best of your level, but you have to be able to adjust your playing style as you get older, and you're not going to be the same athlete. You're not going to be the same player, but you have to find a different version of yourself. And I think that he struggles to do that.
That's a good point, Jess. Here I have Chris Bauerbank, hot take number one. Shay, I think this might be addressed to you.
He's not here, but he's here. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah,
this is exactly like the totalitarianism, the authoritarianism.
He's a micromanager.
Big brother's always watching.
I'm channeling Barb. I have an urgent message from on high, and it is on the field. There were two players, you know, perhaps the best player in the world right now, and maybe a former GOAT.
Yeah, he's probably the best attacking player in the world. Yeah, I think we have to caveat it by say attacking player, because, you know, is Alisson not as good as a goalkeeper as Salah is a winger? I mean, so I think the compulsion is that we should probably categorize it. But yeah, I think he's the best attacker. Now, this is a Premier League bias. I think Peter would want us to say that. The fact that we don't watch the Bundesliga as maybe as much as we should to see the level which someone like Lewandowski operates. But absolutely. And what makes it all the more impressive, Miles, is the fact that he does it from a wing position. I mean, the number of goals and the volume, the audacity of the types of goals and assists, you know, looking back to versus Watford, the outside of the left foot pass into the path of Mane, you know, he can do it all. And juxtaposing him with Ronaldo and others in the game, his work rate defensively is immense.
Let's think about it in terms of like Ballon d'Or status. Does Salah get rated the best player in the world?
Jay, I think it's interesting that you flipped what I think was supposed to be you answering this question into you asking the question, but I will answer the question for you. And then I think Chris wants an answer from you. To say that, yes, I think Salah right now, Jacob, good on you to qualify it. But look, 15 goals in all competitions, 5 assists, Lewandowski, 15 goals, 1 assist. That points there to, you know, Salah's work rate, like you say, Jacob. I mean, look at the 2 goals last weekend against Watford, and then the weekend before against Man City. I mean, that shows his technical quality, you know, also the ability to chip De Gea for his 3rd goal, a hat trick at Old Trafford, only matched by, you know, the great OG Ronaldo. So I think we got to say, yes, best attacking player in the world.
Jess, what are your thoughts? Jess, what are your thoughts?
shout out to Jacob for understanding the importance of different positions and categorizing players, because
that's right.
All too often, you know, I'm a pointed out, all too often goalkeepers get overshadowed when it comes to ranking quality. So good call. I think you're right with the versatility and the different abilities that he offers. All too often we look at forwards and we look at the goals they score, but we don't look at what they offer in other ways. And I think bringing in other teammates, creating opportunities for other players is a key component to one of the best attacking players. You can't just rely on them burying the ball in the back of the net. You have to understand that they have to bring others into the game as well. So I think that plus his defensive efforts set him apart, and like that work rate, like you talk about, always wanting to work no matter what minute in the game it is so important. And as you say, you can juxtapose the two of them in that performance. And I think Chris has a good point about how Salah played really emphasizes where Ronaldo is in his career as well.
Yeah. And, you know, on the topic of Salah, I think we have to talk about Liverpool quite a bit, right? Cause I mean, we can make fun of United all we want, but this is a team that's flying high, right? Like, I'm looking at it. When was the last time Liverpool lost a Premier League game? Do you think that this is a team, Jacob, that is going to win the Premier League, or is it too early to tell?
Well, I don't know that they'll win. I still have great concerns over when it comes African Cup of Nations and that impact that will have on Mane and Salah's fitness. You know, there's the chance that there could be quarantines related to COVID. There's travel, there's injuries. That's a big uncertain period for me that as a Liverpool fan scares me.
Well, it's interesting, you know, The Athletic prior to the game, and I encourage everyone, if you have a subscription, if you don't, message me privately, I'll give you my login. Shay talks about how Liverpool, I mean, just comparing Liverpool this season to Liverpool last season, obviously Liverpool was hit with injuries. You had people playing all out of position, you know, all the different pairings at center back, etc. But there are some things that they are doing differently. They're taking more shots. They're taking less touches before they take a shot. So they're being like incredibly aggressive in terms of their attacking threat, and they're being much more clinical. And we're seeing that in terms of the goals that they're scoring. Last season, it felt like they couldn't score a goal for the life of them, but we're seeing changes in what they are doing that is, you know, leading to us see this Liverpool team that is looking increasingly dominant. Also, obviously with Virgil at the back, they're able to press higher and press their opponents more. So they are, you know, with the personnel, Jacob, like you say, but there are also changes in the way that they're playing that is leading to this domination.
Thanks for that take, Miles. That's really insightful. So let's quickly talk about the elephant in the room. Ole, Charmin, I'm looking at you first, because I think you provide an objective view in this topic, and I really don't want to hear what Miles and Jacob had to say. So,
well, because Shay, she, you know, she's a fan of a championship club, so maybe she can prepare you for what life maybe might be like the last time you got relegated. I think in the 70s. So,
no, I'm not worried about relegation. That's not even the realm of realism.
Of course, I don't think so.
But Charmin, like, what are your thoughts on Ole? Do you think he lasts a season? Do you think he doesn't? And do you think he should last a season?
Any other manager that didn't have the reputation in terms of his playing career would have been gone, you know? And it's hard when you hire someone that's a club legend. It's hard when we've talked about this in the past as well, I'm sure on this pod, I remember speaking about how just because you're a club legend doesn't mean at some point you're doing too much damage to the club that you love. But I just think that any other manager would have been gone by now. I don't know how you continue to excuse it. And I think the issue is in the past, maybe as you mentioned previously in the pod, there were games where the players looked like they were rallying around the manager. And there were games where the players looked like they would pull out a big, you know, must-win result. But where was that fight for the manager this weekend? Did it look like they were fighting for him, or did it look like they had lost his head? And the other thing is, I'm not sure how you'll follow the media, but the fact he didn't want to come out of, you know, to meet the press. That's a huge thing for me, because if you're confident in yourself and you're confident in your managerial decisions and you're confident in your position, you come out and you meet the press and you explain yourself and you hold your head up high. But for me, it looked like he was running away from that and was almost like he's lost faith even in himself. So I'm not sure how much longer he's got. I think that the only thing that buys him time is who he is rather than how he is as a manager.
Yeah, the club legend part is tricky, because at the same time, like, who do you bring? Like, we've seen experiments from other managers who, you know, we deemed as good managers fail. And so you want to, I personally would rather have a club legend, someone who's more invested in the club there until we find the right fit. But unfortunately, not at the detriment of wasting such a talented team. I don't really know what the solution is. And therefore, that's why I think Ole lasts. Not because I think he's a great manager or he deserves the job. I just don't know what the solution is in the interim. And that's what it comes down to.
Well, okay, that's a good point, Shay. I mean, I think there are alternatives, and, you know, but I agree. I think he has to get sacked, and you wait until, you know, either Conte is ready, or you wait until another manager who meets your profile. You could look at maybe the future firing of Ole as an opportunity to start anew. And I think Manchester United should be pretty judicious about who they choose and really think it over. Not rush to appoint a manager if they can't get what they want. And I think that's part of the reason, Miles, you know, we were hurt when Rodgers got sacked. You know, it was kind of maybe some awkward timing, but they did it so that they could get their man. So you hope that Manchester United can be deliberate in what their selection is. But I do believe we have to praise Ole. He was the right man for the job, in the sense that the club is somewhat better off than when he left it. In this moment, they're doing poorly, but he did provide them that stability and foundation after Jose, after Louis van Gaal, after Moyes. He has provided some bit of stability and also provided an avenue for some of these younger players who he had coached at youth ranks to sort of make it through the team. And I think we should applaud him for that.
Yeah. You know, look, this it's slim pickings out there. You know, Koeman's managing Barcelona. You know, it's not like we have a pool of just talented managers just waiting at the helm to take over a Man United job. And it's also a tricky job too, right? But that has to be the option right now on paper, Conte, right, Mouse?
Yeah, I mean, thinking about it, you know, Jacob, I think absolutely right to give credit to Ole. I think what was unfortunate and short-sighted was seeing him as a long-term replacement. There's no way he should have been in charge for this long. Granted, he got that run, that incredible run that had Shea, you know, bouncing up and down. But, you know, the time has run out and he's been exposed. What I do feel for Man United fans, it feels like you guys have been in turmoil since Ferguson left. You had Moyes, that was terrible. Van Gaal, that was also terrible. Mourinho came in, destroyed your club. Then you have Ole with an incredible defeat against PSG. But that was a bubble that has now burst. One thing Chris wants to know, you know, second hot take.
How is he still on this podcast? And he's on this podcast.
Second hot take from the gaffer. Shay, he wants to know, you know, maybe his biggest take was that maybe, you know, we can't be surprised that Man United came out looking the way they did, Ole looking the way they did. They were probably all distracted by Paul Scholes and, you know, that weird bit of, you know, toe sucking he was doing to his daughter that came out a bit before. So,
no wonder they
weren't ready.
Yeah, well, you know, look, he was great on the field. What he does in his personal life with his daughter, and it wasn't even like that. I feel like a pain in the wrong picture is his own business. But that was good content. That was good content,
Chris. You remember that time Shay was clipping his nails on the podcast?
I was there live, but I was there live.
I heard okay. it.
I wasn't I doing it. It with my teeth.
The listeners don't need to know about this. Okay, so let's look. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about other disappointing matches from the week. Okay, we're back. Hey. We had other games. It wasn't just United-Liverpool from the weekend. We saw City win 4-1 against Brighton. We saw the team in green. I don't even want to acknowledge them because I've never watched a game by them, and I never will, lose drastically to Chelsea. And then we saw one of my favorites for the season, Everton, also lose to Watford. What do you guys think? Unless I'm missing anything else, what do you guys think was the most disappointing performance out of those three?
Honestly, I mean, I don't know about disappointing, but Watford got smacked so badly by Liverpool. For them to come back and score 5 goals against Everton, who now sit level with Man United, even on goal difference between 7th and 8th, pretty impressive for them to come back like that. I mean, Everton just looks so bad without Doucouré there. For them to let Watford come back into the game like that, like, credit to Ranieri, but I mean, that has got to be, you know, embarrassing. The only other team to concede 5 was Man United this weekend. I mean, well, Norwich more, but Shay, these are your teams, man.
A bad run for Shay teams. Look, I think a lot is being made about that Everton game. And the biggest thing is, I wouldn't say it's how wonderful Watford played. It's that Everton had this collapse after going 2-1 up. It was nice to see Richarlison back. He scored the goal. And then they just forgot how to defend. You know, they were running into each other. They were getting caught out of position. Some of the goals did have a lot of similarities to the Manchester United match, where there were just gaps appearing all over that Everton defense. You know, Davies and Coleman getting pulled left and right. But it's not a repeatable performance. You know, good for Watford. Perhaps my favorite point of both those matches were Richarlison celebrating against his old club and Joshua King celebrating against his old club. I hate it when players, you know, who play at a club for, you know, just a minute, don't celebrate goals. Goals are the most beautiful thing in life, and they should be celebrated. And I love that, you know, Joshua King did not hold back.
But on that Watford note, you know, growing up from really close to Watford, have a lot of Watford friends, it seems like they finally have some belief in their club too. I saw a lot of, you know, I think they're getting a little ahead of themselves right now, but feeling very confident about pushing up the league and continuing to perform next season. So you have to wonder, was it really, as you mentioned, was it Watford playing very well or Everton being calamitous defensively? And unfortunately, I think some of my Watford friends are getting a little ahead of themselves about what is to come this season.
Switching gears, man, Norwich are bad, huh? Like, I mean, Chelsea were good. They were scoring goals from
all
over.
Well, what's more surprising here? The fact that Norwich lost 7-0, which is, like I said, I don't acknowledge. I'm even surprised I said the name. But the fact that Chelsea scored 7 goals and none of it is from their leading marksman.
Yeah, I mean, interesting when you look at the result on paper. I mean, you see where the goals came from. It came from 2 wingbacks and their 2 wide midfielders.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, very, very impressive. I mean, that Chelsea is finding the goals even without Lukaku. They're obviously an incredibly strong, tough team, solid, you know, in every position. Norwich are just so bad. I mean, you know, we're not surprised. This Norwich team is getting worked by every team. I mean, we could be calling them the new Fulham.
I'm a little bit surprised that Norwich are this bad. I picked them to stay up. I mean, I really thought that there would be some lessons learned from the previous season where they were so open. You know, they lost Buendia, but they brought in a number of other players. I'm just truly shocked. And they scored, what, 2 goals all season? But they did come have – didn't they have back-to-back draws, right? It was at Brighton and Burnley, I believe. I don't know what's up. But if we're talking about – Ole getting fired, I mean, surely you got to cut Daniel Farke loose.
Yeah, he's robbing a living right now, let's be honest. I don't know how you stay in a job. Again, it might be that there's not the serious amount of managers around to select, but unbelievable that you can be scoring 2 goals on your season. Just imagine being a fan of a team right now that scored 2 goals. Like you talked about goals, Jacob, needing to be celebrated. You've had 2 goals to celebrate the entire season.
But right. Imagine, Jess, when that third goal comes in, imagine how great that's going to be.
Not if it's in a 5-1 loss.
This is, they literally, like, at least Aliki Coltrane, Fulham, was able to score goals. They led a lot of goals, but at least they were able to score goals. Norwich is just invisible.
Let me just ask you a quick question. I know we were talking about Chelsea, but I can't let this get away. Just looking at Norwich's fixtures, when do we expect them to get a win? They're winless, you know, in 9 games. Will they get a win this year?
Miles, why don't you read down the fixtures and we'll tell you when we think they're going to win.
Oh, yes, gladly. Leeds, Brentford, Southampton, Wolves, Newcastle, Tottenham, Man United,
stop,
Villa.
Stop. They can beat Newcastle.
Okay, so November 30th.
Yeah, it's possible.
But it's only going to be 1-0 because they can only score one goal. They're just going to have to shut up shop.
Oh, it's away, though. It's away. I should remark it as away. Does that change your...
No, because we don't know who's going to be managing Newcastle at that point. Geordie Nation could already be, you know, in full effect, furious that Newcastle has not appointed a big manager. Yeah, I don't know. If he doesn't win by that point, surely he's got to get the axe.
Yeah, so let me transition this a little bit. We're talking about disappointing performances. Even though we knew Norwich sucked, that loss was still disappointing. But can we just give a quick shout out to some of the teams that are, you know, defying our initial logic? We're talking about Arsenal, a team that hasn't lost in the last 5. We're talking about Wolves. I mean, granted they drew, but, you know, great recent run of form. You know, Crystal Palace, you know, you can take it for what it is. It's still 4 straight draws. It's not any losses. So
no, and Benteke is scoring. I mean, that's a miracle. I thought Crystal Palace really would be so bad. Yeah, they're playing out of their mind.
Yeah, Benteke scoring, and he could have had 4 goals. I think he hit the post twice, missed an open chance from 6 yards out. Again, someone who I thought was done and dusted and buried has slowly started to rehab his career. But yeah, they've well overperformed. I mean, Brighton in 5th place, Brighton and West Ham 4 and 5. I think those are the teams we have to look at. You know, David Moyes is a good manager. You know, he had his slip ups at United. Sunderland was a rough go. Spain, we'll just forget he even went there. You know, the highlight of that being his inability to pronounce a Yeramendi. But I think we really got to give them credit. I mean, that's a well high flying team. They're winning in Europe. They're winning in the league. And I think they're the real deal.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and wrap it up with some prediction league and listening lessons. All right, we're back. Prediction league, guys. I will say, with all this drama, we still have some very, very strong performances by some of our very own. But before we get into it, just want to highlight that thank you, everyone, for filling out prediction league this week. Remember, it's brought to you by Soji. We don't want to miss that opportunity to talk about Soji. But also, we have monthly winners now. No longer overall winners, we have monthly winners. And for the month of October, Adam Beasley is still in the lead with 20, but we have some people gaining some ground. And Jacob, you are one of those people. Not only are you 17 points, so 3 behind the month of October leader, but you also had the most for the week out of everyone on the podcast with 7. Before we get to your segment and you do all your, you know, your gloating, the high for the week was 8, and that was by 4 different people. Kevin, my buddy Kevin, was on that list. Up your Arsenal. We have Charlie AFFCU and another name that I can't pronounce, but a very strong week. And Jacob, you're one of those folks. How's it feel? What was the key to success this week? And then also transition that into what's your Oracle pick coming up?
Ooh, what was my key to success? A lot of guessing and making sure I woke up 5 minutes before the matches started at 3 a.m. my time to make sure I got my picks in. So that was...
So you're dedicated.
I'm dedicated. No one's putting in as hard work. You know, Halloween's coming up. I'm brewing a cauldron. I'm trying to be clairvoyant. But what is my Oracle pick for next week? There are some interesting games coming up this week. And then a Halloween scary, a team we talked about, Norwich versus Leeds. Norwich are at home. Leeds could be without Rafinha. I know we said that they wouldn't win until Newcastle, but I'm tempted to say one of these teams gets out of their rut. And I think just because they're at home, I think Norwich are going to get a result. I take back my previous statements. I think I'd probably pick Norwich at home. It's going to be what I would say would be a differential pick. You know, if I get it, I think most people will pick Leeds. I think a draw is most likely, but I'm going to go ahead and say pick Norwich, try and pick up a point on those ahead of me.
That's picking up a point. Okay. All right. Let's transition to listener questions. Let's see what the folks have for us. If I have to deal with an Ole question, God help me. Okay. I'm going to start from the top. I'm going to call you guys out. You're going to answer one each. Does that work? All right. Well, Peter and Chris weren't shy this week, that's for sure. Let's start with Jeremiah Carson. He said, Jesse Lingard is not looking as welcome anymore. United, could West Ham still benefit from him, or have they moved on? Well, he can't go there right now, but Miles, what are your thoughts on that?
That is an interesting question because I would say, of course, they could benefit from him. But, you know, full credit to Benrahma, who's really stepped up in that role playing in the middle. And he has been very influential. I mean, I think any player that came and made an impact like Lingard did last season, you would want him again. But I will say that, you know, West Ham do look like, you know, Benrahma's filled that role quite well. I mean, granted, Lingard could come, play through the middle, Benrahma out wide. So he's always got a place there.
Next question from James Gardner. Justice for you. Next manager to be sacked, Rafa or Ole?
Oof. Can they both go on the same day? No, I think that Rafa's got longer. Ole's going to go.
I was going to say Rafa. So Rafa, Ole first, and then Rafa takes Ole's job. I think that would be.
Oh, that's a
merry-go-round.
Big we just switch hot prediction.
That's a terrible question. That's a terrible question.
Jacob, next question for you. When William Saliba comes back on loan at Marseille, whose spot does he take in Arsenal's back line, or do they shift to a back three?
I don't think he comes in. I think you'd want to have a little bit more experience. You're talking about bringing in, I think, like a 21-year-old or 20-year-old with no Premier League experience coming into your team. Yeah, I don't think so. You got a lot of youth up top, and I think that's kind of a bit of a problem as is already. You know, there are periods where Saka floats in and out of the games. I think, you know, Arsenal needs to not mess around with that. And instead, you know, my pick for manager of the season needs to focus on getting this team to show up and have a coherent plan of attack. I mean, literally have a coherent plan of attack, you know, game in and game out, work on some of that consistency.
Got it. Okay. Moving down the list. Andrew Detmer, who asked a lot of questions, Miles, is for you. 10 years ago, I don't know why we're always talking about United on these things, but 10 years ago, United got slapped by 5 goals at Old Trafford by the noisy neighbor, signifying the beginning of City's dominance and United being lost in the, I don't like this question. Okay. Bottom line is, what do you think this similar result means for United? Will it wake them up?
Shay, I like that they brought that up because I actually remember watching this game with you in Ann Arbor. We watched this game together and I was so shocked for you. You know, this was pre-pod times, you know, so we didn't even get our hot takes, you know, on tape. But I do remember you making some nice chicken with sriracha for me. It was very good. I watched in awe, thinking, wow, do I think Liverpool could ever do that to Man United one day? And, you know, here we are. So 10 years later, what I think for this means for Man United, unfortunately, I think it means another $400 million spent, a new manager who may get it right. But Ole's got to go. Ole's got to go.
Okay. Well, continuing in that vein, and we already kind of answered both of these questions, but Jess, I'll give it to you. I'll tee it up to you to just bring it home again. So Peter asked a two-part question. The first one is about Conte United. We already talked about that quite a bit, so we'll skip to the second part. And he says here, "This at what point would you say Salah is Liverpool's best player in the modern Premier League era? Best player? I won't say anything. What are your thoughts on that, Jess?
Well, I think we talked about it a lot earlier on as well. So at this point, we can go with at least one of them. He's up there with the greats, as we say. It's not just about his goals that he brings in, but everything that he adds to the team and how he is a catalyst for Liverpool's success. So you can't shake that someone that's a catalyst for a team success wouldn't be one of the best in the Premier League.
Damn, facts. I don't know how Gerard would feel about that, but I hear you. And then the very last question, I left it for myself. It's by our own very Christopher Baalbeck, who has somehow made multiple appearances on this podcast. He said, this one's for Shay. If you were at Old Trafford this weekend, would you have stayed for the full 90 minutes? well, I'll tell you what. The weather was, it was kind of chilly, so I probably would have been cold and angry. And probably a little tired because I would probably had a couple beers knowing that United was getting thrashed. So no, I would not have stayed. But I probably wouldn't have shared that with anybody. I would have been on my way to another stadium to go watch one of my other favorite teams play. So that's my answer.
Oh, you're passing the outro to me? Well, thanks very much, Shay. Yeah, I'm glad we've concluded another hour. It could have been so much worse, just like that Manchester United game. This podcast could have been so much worse, but you managed to keep it together, Shay. We won't be firing you. I say we fire Chris. But thanks for listening, folks. You can find us at acrossthepod.co, iTunes, Apple Music, Google.
Wherever you find podcasts.
And wherever you find podcasts. Thank you for the assist there, Jess. We're a little rusty, as you can tell.
We're inclusive. Please review, subscribe. See how we did that? All of us chip in. Inclusive. It's not, you know, we may have to implement this process going forward. But thank you guys for listening.
Appreciate it, Shay.